Welcome to Therapod. Therapod podcast is about breaking down what we've learned and what we practice as therapists into easy to understand and accessible information. We know that parenting and caring for a child, especially one that has additional needs, can be challenging if not overwhelming. We are here to break it down for you. We're a group of experienced clinicians, occupational therapists, speech and language therapists, psychologists, and pediatrician, and we will be chatting with parents, teachers, and other professionals working with children. We will also be reviewing books, toys, and equipment so you can make informed decisions. Our information is not clinical advice. These are useful insights and information, so please seek professional help if you need it.
Hi, my name is Banu. I'm an occupational therapist with 20 years of experience. As an occupational therapist, I break down the skills needed for a task and see if the person or child has a capacity to complete those steps. And if they don't, how can I help them bridge that gap? I love working with parents, carers, and teachers to help them support their child's regulation through sensory strategies. I'm so excited to be talking to all of you and introducing Therapod. It's just that I feel that parents are so overwhelmed and they need information in a way that they can actually access it quickly, understand it easily, and use it in everyday context. I hope that with Therapod, we will bring you that reliable information in a way that you can actually use it. And the whole point of this is to reduce the overwhelm and find joy in parenting.
Hi, I'm Julie, a speech and language therapist. I love working with children, adolescents, and young adults. I've practiced all around the world, including Vietnam, Australia, and Ireland. I'm an advocate for neuroaffirming and trauma-informed care. My main calling is supporting families to use communication and connection to build secure and positive relationships with their children, all while supporting their child's communication and development. I also specialize in neurodevelopmental assessments such as ASD, developmental language disorder, and ADHD.
I'm Claire. I'm a senior clinical psychologist with almost 20 years experience working with children and families. I've been working in clinical psychology for nearly 14 years now, and I've worked across primary care, mental health, disability, trauma, and pediatric services. As a parent and a clinician, I'm passionate about supporting children to thrive and to being a compassionate support to their parents and caregivers.
I'm Jay. I'm a developmental pediatrician working in the field of pediatrics for 13 years. Having originally qualified in South Africa and now currently living in Ireland, I have great experience across different cultural backgrounds. I'm deeply passionate about promoting both physical and mental health in children and adolescents. I'm excited to share my role within Therapod, where I will share my insights with you and answer questions related to medical symptoms and safety around the use of medication. I'm excited to embark on this journey with you.
And it's an amazing opportunity to just make some of that accessible to people who are, you know, interested and able to adapt that, to bring that into their lives and see what's a good fit for their family, who can take bits that fit and recognize that actually there definitely be bits that don't fit and that's not for them. And that's perfect because we have the experience and the knowledge to be able to say this is consistently what we know from really good research, from being a scientist practitioner, that this is really important, helpful, useful, applicable knowledge, and to help share that. And I think one of the things that keeps coming back to me the more I learn as well is that Maya Angelou quote, "Do the best you can until you know better. Then when you know better, do better."
Parenting all around.
Yeah.
And like the stuff that I've been following and listening to and kind of trying to figure out what's out there. Oh, our parents need help and support. I mean, only that when things get to be really difficult, that they feel that they can reach out and ask first. And that's not okay. You know, it's the whole idea of being able to say, actually, this is hard. The world has changed since we were kids.
Oh, yeah.
We were parented. Yeah. Parenting is different. We know so much about the brain. It's personal neuroscience. It's so huge now that wasn't there before. So, of course, there's something extra that we can do earlier, sooner, than we know will help to shift the trajectory away from becoming disrupted and to help with hair ruptures and all of that. So it's not.
And it doesn't have to be because you have a diagnosis. You know, it's not. Yeah. You can have needs or need support.
I think I actually interpreted additional needs. I didn't see it as ASD, to be honest. I thought it was just everybody, because everybody is on their own profile. So when you said additional needs, I just presumed it meant everybody. I didn't perceive it as, oh, it actually, I didn't know that it was referring to ASD or ADHD. So I just thought it was just everyone, because
And
they
I
all have
suppose
ADHD.
it isn't meant to, and that's why it's kind of keeping
That's
it
why, that's what,
bland as additional. Because I remember when like Rudra was a baby and he wouldn't sleep and he had lots of sensory issues, but I didn't know what I know now.
Yes.
And if I'd known that, life would have been so much easier and you'd have had a happier baby. Not that there's additional need as such, but at that time, at
It
that
was.
point, it is.
It's helping to
Yeah.
understand children more and better and understand what the brain is hearing. I think it's a huge part as well that I'm very conscious of the whole idea of it takes a village, right? That's like we all know that, intrinsically, but that's not there. It's not, it doesn't exist as much anymore. Or I think it seems as though that's getting more fragmented, the idea of having a village around you to support you, just the way the world has changed. And there's pros and cons to all of that, but it does mean that things can be harder, and you are more on your own and you're trying to figure things out. And whereas before, someone would have given you a breather, a break to let you kind of regulate your own nervous system naturally without knowing what you were doing, but you would have done it. And then you can bring more creativity, more thinking, more problem solving to figure out, actually, what does my kid need right now? But when you're trying to do everything all the time, it's so exhausting. You don't have room to do that. So you're not able to be as, perhaps at times, as responsive as maybe, we're biologically kind of built to be with the village when we don't have them.
And I'm wondering as well, like this day and age, and that picture that you show, we'll put it up on our social media as well, that it is a different world that we're parenting in, and it's not the world we were parented in. And taking that into context, like when everything's a challenge, like there's screens, there's the school system is different, the play role is different, language is different,
Language is
isn't it?
different. And I think as well then there's that added pressure of social media, of perfect family, perfect mom, that it's almost harder to ask for help because you're just seeing everyone's perfect life and no one else is having these problems except me. So I do think that can make it
And just
harder.
even from, I suppose, mine, so as well, you understand. So we're not even living in the country that we grew up in. So that's like we talk about takes a village. I don't have children, but if I had to have a child or any other kids, it would be myself, my partner. Like, who's going to help us? Who do I go? Even if I need 5 or 10 minutes of break, because if you both are working, who do we have? Except you pay for nanny. Do you know if that's possible? And if that's not possible, where do we go from there?
And it's that part about being able to recognize that a lot of our parenting approaches, our ways of understanding our kids, are coming from what we've grown up with, what we've learned, what's become the norm of within our family, and that is very much a cultural need to belong to. And I think that comes up massively with sleep. That's one of the other problematics where people think my kid is supposed to be able to sleep through the night from, they're so great. I just heard last week about a baby came home from hospital. They've just literally been born. First day home from hospital, it was great. They slept through the night. Great baby. It's going to be great. And I just thought, oh, wow, like there's so much, loaded in that one sentence that someone is assuming this is what a good baby is supposed to be. And that's not really, that's one's kind of baby one child. And there is nothing, babies aren't supposed to
Sleep
be
through the
this
night
good. Yeah.
anyway.
And it depends where you live and what culture and family you've grown up with, what they see as what is normal for a baby to do or not do, and whether a baby should co-sleep or not sleep. They're so loaded and there's so many kind of post-instant media, I was going to say. Social media, all of those
Also
things,
instant
and
media.
books and talks about what is normal for a child's sleep and how to get them into a normal. And it depends absolutely the culture you grow up in to say what is normal. And actually, babies are all different. It's the same with toileting. I've talked to friends and through work where people have expectations of kids being able to toilet at 1 or 2 years of age and before going to preschool, and the others they're like, I don't mind, I'm going to approach toileting till 4 or 5. And like, there is no one way or right way. It is integrating who you are as a parent with your cultural experiences, with your family history. That all has to be part of it
And
and
matching it
perspective.
to what the child needs and wants and what they're able for,
Yeah.
you know?
And without feeling like something is wrong,
because they're not doing the same as somebody
Yeah.
else. And we do that ourselves as parents and as adults all the time. And we beat ourselves up about what's good enough, what's normal, where do we belong. And it's even just recognizing, oh, that's what's driving this. That's why I think something's wrong. That's why I feel uncomfortable with it. Rather than there's something actually that does need a bit of support.
Just
And figuring, getting to know ourselves and our children. And we change all the time, and our kids change all the time. So our, you know, what we project on them and who we see them as, like, we just need to be more flexible at times. And maybe we kind of are kind of given permission to or something.
Going back to even something interesting you said about the instantaneous, or needing to have that instant gratification that we would be used to with social media and so forth. And now you're hearing everybody talk about, well, we're just talking earlier about ADHD traits, for example, right? Like, before ADHD was seen as a diagnosis, how did we manage this condition? Because it wasn't that it wasn't there. It wasn't that ASD was not there. We just have a terminology to name it now. And that's why we're seeing the videos, because we've got diagnostic criteria. But if you pull back, how did we manage this, these kind of things? And we did by adjusting our environments.
We did. Like, we did. And our lifestyle was
and our
very
lifestyle,
different.
It was
We
different.
Were very outdoorsy, which is very suitable for people with, you know, ASD or ADHD and all the neurodiverse profiles, because there's a sensory element to it. There's a lot of proprioceptive plays, proprioceptive work even.
We never lived in apartments. You know, we lived in houses. And everybody collected
and
on
you
the
would
street.
Do chores. You would do
you
chores.
Know, do chores.
Which made a huge difference to regulation.
The psychologist once said that the single most factor that would identify a successful adult is being able to have do chores as a child and be given that responsibility. That actually is a positive predictor for success in adult life. And I think that that's significant, because we did it naturally because we needed, that's what we needed to do. That was your job.
And that is, and things like that make you use all your sensory systems.
Yes.
So you're constantly integrating all your sensory systems and not just regulating, but you're learning, because that's how we learn. Okay, this is the right way to do it. Not right way. More like, when my muscles move this way, my actions are like this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you learn, and you get better at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that you're part of the family.
You're part of the family. And you've done something.
And it's not in... also, then, it's everyone has kind of equal value and partnership.
And there's a language element to it as well, isn't there? Where you're following
your reception,
remembering information, relating information. Yeah. I'm even thinking about just succeeding. You know, like, I feel like now the environment's set up for those kiddies or adults to fail, and you're constantly getting in trouble and constantly getting these negative reinforcements. But that if you were doing those chores or doing those jobs, that you're succeeding, you're doing something. I remember my dad saying about, like, making your bed in the morning, and just that simple, like, you succeeded, you did one thing, and, like, you're starting off the day right, because and it's just so simple, pick it up and put it down, but your day is,
and that's what the ministry actually recommends. Even if you like making your bed and cleaning your quarters is actually part of the beginning of their even a successful day, as you said. So it'd be something very advocated for, you know, across the board on multiple different areas or facilities, if you know what I mean. Like, even if you had to think about that, okay, there's something about achieving.
And I did was listening to something the other day about childhood and how much it's changing and moving to all of the structured activities and the kind of, you know, real structured days, and how that's, you know, there's a psychologist whose name I can't remember, but describing it as an assault on childhood, because we're moving from opportunities to be part of the chores, the part of the family life, you know, part of, and again, free play and getting out there, running around. It's like being able to self-identify your needs in terms of your regulation and well-being. And we're losing that opportunity, and it's kind of becoming, you know, this now is kind of my word, but that it's nearly kind of performance-y based. We're kind of moving away from a natural intrinsic knowing of your own body, your own, building your own intuition, supporting your own self-knowledge.
Now, I'm a big fan of structured activities, but that's the OT in me, because it is a chance to practice skills, try skills, and be a part of a group. But I can see where you're coming from, because when COVID hit, I can remember the relief that right. We don't have to rush, 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 rush.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And people can now take their time to, you know, it wasn't get in the door after school, get your, you know, grab your swimming gear, go swimming, go to something else. But there's a balance there,
exactly.
isn't there?
Yeah. And it's that balance, having both, like opportunities to develop skills and be part of that, but also opportunities to go to the playground and practice all of those skills in a natural environment. That doesn't have to be, we have to go to a class to do that. It's, you know, learning on the playground how to do, you know, your climbing, your movement, all of that natural opportunity, plus the social skills of managing in the playground and having to ask another kid to play, that kind of vulnerability and exposure.
Waiting your turn.
All of those bits, that
sharing.
I think that they would have to be kind of taught implicitly for some kids, and some kids will need support with that and extra practice and extra opportunities, and maybe, you know, practicing in smaller groups and going to the playground when it's quieter, all of that stuff. But that's all kind of giving it in their language, in their world, and us trying to pull them out of that into what we decide it should look like.
And also there's huge value in not directing their life all the time, where they can actually find a piece of stone or a piece of string and explore their world instead of being sat at the table. So we're doing painting now, or we're doing this now, and everything's there. I've set it all up, but actually that setting up needs to happen.
By the
time.
And like you're saying, a balance of some of a bit of both, where you are helping them to have those organizational skills in terms of boundaries and, you know, organizing your internal world in supported by externally that, but also those opportunities to just be mindful.
I think in my sessions, like when I have the early intervention kiddies, just having those child-led sessions where you just, and that's when you see them succeed, that's when you see the progress. Is if they want to play with Play-Doh, that's fine. I don't have my session set up. It's follow their lead. What do they enjoy? How can we then use that?
It's interesting you say that, because I've been speaking to a few parents, and one of the emerging themes is like, they're just playing with the child. So I don't know that there's any therapy going on, and I'm spending a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to that?
I think that's why it's so important to find a therapist who can, you know, like have the parent in and tell them what you're doing. Like, look, this is joint attention. This is turn taking. This is, you know, what are we actually doing in this game? Like, you're playing a dollhouse. We're talking about prepositions. We're talking about, you know, we're making a little story. Oh, look how I expanded their language. But it's all through what they're interested in and what they're doing. Like, you can do, when you're playing, can work in anything.
So you're meeting therapeutic goals.
Even like they say that play, there's a quote, play is a child's work or something
that's it.
But there was a study, I'll find it, but we're saying where they say if you want a child to learn something, you should repeat it 400 times for that, like, neuro during play you have to repeat it 10 times.
Yeah, I think so, they actually gave us that study.
So that they learn so much more when they're playing rather than table.
That's a brilliant point about, you know, being able to communicate that to parents, and not all therapists are able to kind of do that well or take the time.
I find as well, which is really interesting, when we are playing in a session, that again, when we're saying that some parents forget how to play or need that, like, coaching on how to play with a kiddie, it's just an observation I've had, that you find they buy all the same toys you have them at home, because they're like, you're modeling to them. They're like, okay, that's how I play with that toy. I'm going to buy that, and we'll practice that, and we'll play that. Yeah.
Over subscribing that child, that helicopter parenting you may refer to sometimes, where you kind of really overly structure, and then coming into that context about, you know, what play brings in the context of imagination, and how even some parents might find it difficult themselves to understand that. But when you kind of overstructure for this child, you don't allow them to be able to then engage in their own imagination. And their own imagination actually is almost directly related to intelligence. So, and if you also, there's something therapeutic about allowing a child to be bored, because then the child comes up with their own abilities to be able to entertain themselves or navigate. So when you're thinking about them as an adult, working, you know, a 9-to-5 job, that's not very stimulating, not very exciting. Your employer is not structuring your whole day in a very stimulating way. So how do you navigate that? It's because you would have learned that as a child through your own boredom, and maybe how you navigated that to be able to function as a, you know, in society and in your job as and being successful in it, because you actually are able to navigate your own way.
Tolerate that feeling.
Yeah.
But I found that, like, when you work with children who are on the spectrum, it is, and that's one of the advice that I would give is to structure their time.
Yeah.
And I think some children need more structuring than others, but it's also learning that maybe this is a time that they do need not the structure and that they might need to tolerate. I think we're very quick to fill their time. I don't know, does anyone else remember, but I remember tagging along with my parents, whether we're going to the doctor or wherever else, and just sitting there. I don't know what I was doing. I was probably staring at nothing, but I do remember that now we children don't do that. They have a screen handed to them, or there's some entertainment, or they're being watched by somebody else, and that space isn't there. Now, I don't know, does that fit all children and their needs? But certainly it's happening more than it should.
Yeah, and those
Even
kind of naturalistic opportunities for exposure to life, family life experiences, like being at the doctor's surgery, like seeing what that's like without it having to be about you all the time, but that you get to see your parents and the world functioning around you and be an observer in it.
it's not about parenting then, but it's using what worked then and how it would apply to what we have right now, even if it is shorter periods.
And before we finish, it's always good to hold in mind that if there's something that has resonated with you and that it's staying with you, or maybe leading to a big feeling that you want to talk about, contact your GP, who is your first port of call, and don't be afraid to reach out to family and friends to have a chat. Follow us on your favorite podcast platforms for updates. We also do book reviews on Instagram, so make sure to follow us on therapod.podcast for Instagram. If you have any topics or queries you'd like us to address, email therapodpodcast@gmail.com. That's therapodpodcast@gmail.com, or DM on Instagram. Bye.